This is Jan Fisher. I'm interviewing Zita Rimley on April 29th, 1976, in her home at about 6 p.m.
It was suggested I begin this interview with when and where I was born. I am reminded of a poem I was taught as a very young child. Zita Donegan is my name. America is my nation. North Platte is my dwelling place and heaven my expectation. That takes care of the where. Now for the when. All official records in North Platte Courthouse were burned in a disastrous fire that leveled the courthouse square, that leveled the courthouse in the square downtown. But the baptismal records at St. Patrick's Church states I was born November 4, 1904. My mother also told me that I attended the St. Louis World's Fair in 1904 with her, or rather in her, during the summer of 1904.
Could you tell me something more about your family, your mother and father, and what their interests were and where they were born?
My mother was born Anna Rush on a farm in near Savannah, Illinois, in 1857. My father was born Joseph Donegan in a nearby farm in 1854. They were married in 1880 and came to Kansas in a wagon. They tell of meeting the bandits, Jesse James and his brother, but all they did was ask for water. They settled on a rented farm near North Platte, also near a sister of my father's, Mary Fakey. My mother lost a child born prematurely during the first winter blizzard and vowed she would never spend another winter on a Nebraska farm. And they moved to North Platte, where my father obtained a job with the Union Pacific Railroad, where he was employed until he retired. The first money my mother could get her hands on, she bought one half block on the edge of town. Their first home on Willow Street was burned down in a prairie fire. Tales of how the whole town worked to put out the fire, getting in line to fill pails of water from the hand pump, pouring it on the fire and hitting the fire with gunny sacks. My father's eyelashes and mustache were burned off. Later, my mother heard about the government selling officers' homes at Fort McPherson, about 40 miles southeast of North Platte. She hired several men with hay racks to drive to Fort McPherson, cut up the house she bought, move the pieces to North Platte, and rebuilding the house, completing a lovely seven-room, two-story home of solid cedar at 208 South Sycamore Street. It is still a lovely place, having been remodeled several times, and is now a two-family home. I was born there, and I have the cherry bed I was born in. I was the youngest of eight. My mother always said that with four girls and four boys, she had enough to dance the quadrille. When I was born, two of the family had already left home, and the five at home were much older than I, as my mother was almost 50 when I was born. I think that is why I have always loved cats. I used to say everyone could boss me, but the only one I had any authority over was the family cat.
How much older was your, older than you was your oldest
sister? Well, she was about 22 years older than I was.
Okay.
And my older sister, Mabel, moved to Cheyenne, then to Denver, and then to Los Angeles, where she spent years as a court reporter and legal secretary, dying 5 months ago at the age of 93. She worked for years for U.S. Webb, who was California Attorney General, for about 25 years. Sometimes she used official stationery for letters home, and I always had great pride in telling my friends that my sister worked for United States Webb. Yes, it was Ulysses Grand Webb. My oldest brother, Joe, completed a machinist course in Cheyenne, went to San Francisco, and spent his life as an engineer on different ships sailing around the world. We received cards from Hong Kong, Yokohama, Reno, Rio de Janeiro, Buenos Aires, London, Valparaiso. I always took them to school, showing them off, as I was the only one having a correspondence from all over the world. For a couple of years, all my clothes were made of silk pongee, as he sent Mother bolts of the cloth from China. My brother Arthur worked with my uncle Arthur Rush in Rush Mercantile Store, the largest grocery store in western Nebraska. My brother Cyril was a football star player in North Platte High School when it won state championship for 3 years, and the four top players went to the University of Nebraska, where they all played on a team that won national honors and defeated a Notre Dame Rockne coach team. My brother Cyril was scoutmaster in North Platte. My brother Noel, after high school, worked as a brakeman for the Union Pacific. My sister Florence, 7 years older than I, worked as a legal secretary before marrying a farmer and having five daughters. All four of my brothers were in World War I, and three of them were overseas. My youngest brother Noel was killed in France in the Argonne Offensive. The Veterans of Foreign Wars Post was in North Platte was named the Noel C. Donegan Post, as he was the first Lincoln County boy to be killed in action in World War I. Cyril, after returning from France, received his degree at the University in Lincoln and then went to Notre Dame, Indiana, where he spent the rest of his life joining the Holy Cross Order and becoming Brother Kevin. He taught undergraduates and then worked for years on the Ave Maria, the magazine they published.
Can I ask you, dear, what sort of effect did World War I have on your family as far as you when you were living at home there? Were there differences in what was going on in the family with the brothers gone overseas?
Well, we had a huge, they had a children's crusade. They had victory gardens, and I had a huge victory garden. And it was terrific soil because it happened to be on across the alley, our lots across the alley, and it used to have the big chicken yard there, and so the ground was very fertile. And I got, I remember, a certificate for the best vegetables.
Thanks the chickens.
Thanks the chickens. The best vegetables raised in the state. But, of course, everybody was terrifically patriotic. Nobody had, if there was no dissent that we were doing the wrong thing to going to war. Mm-hmm. It was, I know my mother had a big flag at the window with four stars in it, and it was really everybody felt that it was our war, mm-hmm. although it was fought so far away. Mm-hmm. But I do think at times I had a very lonely childhood, as we lived next door to the elder family with 11 children, mm-hmm. with several near my own age, and I always felt abused because I wanted more brothers and sisters. Then my first 2 years in school were in a Catholic school 12 blocks from home, and when the parish couldn't afford a school, I attended the Washington Elementary School in the 3rd, 4th, 5th, and 6th grades. In the 4th grade, I had a severe attack of appendicitis and was rushed to Omaha to St. Joseph's Hospital. The whole class wrote me letters, and years later, I showed Alvin Weingang, then state senator from Santa Barbara County, the letter he sent to me when he was in the 4th grade. I cut up stitches in small pieces and awarded my best friends with samples of my stitches. And one friend writes she still has my stitch, so I had a good time with my operation. My mother was very strict with me, I think too strict. She was very thrifty, never buying anything unless the purchase was well thought out. We had the first three-piece set of overstuffed furniture on our neighborhood. We had a beautiful seven-passenger Willie's Night when I was a girl, and I drove it when I was 13 on. But I wasn't allowed to get off the pavement. My mother was the first one in town to have a garage built on the house with a door into the house, and she was told she would never be able to get fire insurance, that simply wasn't done. She said she didn't see any point in getting out in the rain or cold, walking to the back of the property to get in a car, and getting out wet, coming in from the garage to the house. It wasn't long until all the new homes were built with attached garages. She always had beautiful flowers, and she always said she managed to pay the water bill with prize money she won at the county fair. She also paid the family sugar bill with prizes won on her jams and jellies. I remember attending a city council meeting with her when she urged the city council to purchase the home of Buffalo Bill, William F. Cody, as a museum. It was a large three-story frame house with porches on three sides and much of the gingerbread of the time. They rejected the idea. She tried to raise the $10,000 needed herself but couldn't do it. Now, on entering North Platte, the first thing one sees is a huge sign, Buffalo Bill's hometown, but they didn't even have the foresight to buy his home. There is a Scott's Rest Cody Ranch north of town, which is a state museum and has many of the Buffalo Bill artifacts. Then St. Patrick's built a new parish school taught by Ursuline's nuns, and I attended beginning in the 7th through 12th grades. I studied quite hard, as they really did give us homework, and I was always the top of the class and valedictorian of our senior class, although there were only 10 in the class. Then you asked about our neighborhood and what we did as children. Our neighborhood had numerous children, and we really had much fun playing games, hide-and-seek, pull-away, run-sheep-run, kick-the-can, statuary, on Sunday afternoons and the long summer evenings. We always made beautiful May baskets, delivering them filled the 1st of May to friends, and always had Easter eggs put in our own nest. I was told after we grew up, the succeeding generations never did those things. Then my father was a good union man belonging to the Brotherhood of Locomotive Engineers. I remember hearing the family talk about an early day strike of the Union Pacific employees and the hard times it caused. My mother baked bread and my older brothers delivered it in a cart pulled by the family goat. My uncle, owning a large grocery store, gave us credit, so I guess they always had enough to eat. The enmity caused by the strike against the strikebreakers caused trouble for generations. I wasn't allowed to speak to the children of parents who were on strike. They were called scabs, even though the strike was long before I was born. My father was a great gardener, raising corn, tomatoes, peas, beans, carrots, beets, parsnips. Mama canned and Papa buried the root vegetables in sand in the basement, dried the celery so we had fresh vegetables all winter. Sometimes they were quite limp, but would freshen up by soaking them in water. Then a big family event was to go graping along the South Platte River, where we would pick wild grapes and choke cherries. We also usually got poison ivy, but would wash our hands and arms and neck with soap, leaving it dry on the skin, and that was supposed to prevent the poison ivy. My father had a wine press in the basement and made barrels of wine. The only time he used it was to pour it over a large dish of oatmeal every morning. He always had about 20 hives of bees, so we had honey. I helped him every Saturday put wax starters in the square boxes and so forth. I was allowed to sell the honey to 10 steady customers every Saturday morning for 15 cents a pound, and I got to keep 5 cents. So I made 50 cents a week, which is more than my neighbor friends had to spend. Then our family had an annual pass on the Union Pacific and could order passes on other railroads, and my mother always took advantage of it. We went to Omaha 300 miles to the east or Denver 350 miles to the west about once a month. We would leave North Platte at midnight, arrive at Omaha at 8 a.m., shop until 4 p.m., and arrive back in North Platte at midnight. Mama always insisted on sitting up all night, although she could get a Pullman or tourist at reduced rates, saying she could think of no easier way of earning $2 than by sitting up all night. Mama was the first in our town to petition for sewers. She had to get property owners to sign, and she went to the tax office to get names and addresses of out-of-town property owners so she could write them to sign. It was a big event at 208 South Sycamore when we connected the tub to the sewer. Being the baby, I was allowed to take the first bath in a tub that is still in use.
Great.
Then I think you've talked about
Chautauquas. You two mentioned the Chautauquas, and the other time we had talked, you mentioned to me that these were a big event in the Midwest, and I thought maybe you could just describe them and tell me more about what they were.
Well, I was always interested in well-known personalities, and the Red Pathhorner Chautauqua came to North Platte every summer, and it was truly a wonderful occasion for the town. They stayed a week and had a huge tent with folding chairs and stage. Each day had different entertainment. All the children came in the mornings to rehearse for the huge extravaganza to be held on Saturday mornings. I couldn't sing or dance, but I always got a speaking part. In the afternoon, professional singers, instrumental groups, cooking demonstrations, also wonderful for fur town folks, small town folks. You know, in the evening, they had lectures, poets, jugglers, nearly always mind readers who did pull some really wonderful things. My mother was always very psychic. She used to entertain my friends at parties by taking them around. They would think of an object, and my mother could always lead them right to the place they were thinking of by holding their hand. I never did know how she did it. William Jennings Bryan always came every summer, and I was so thrilled by him. William Gibbs McAdoo, a member of Wilson's cabinet, also his son-in-law, was there one summer. We always put up a tent in the grove nearby the Chautauqua tent, and we had lemonade, cookies, a sanitary couch, chairs, and so forth for friends to drop in who came to the Chautauqua and stayed all day. My mother always had a group of girls who joined the flower mission. She took them on hikes in the summer to collect wildflowers, and she taught them their names and giving prizes to those who knew the most names. Years later, at a picnic in a North Platte picnic here in Bixby Park, I met an old lady who knew my mother, and she said whenever she saw Mama, she always thought of the biblical passage, "We do not live by bread alone," on account of her great love for flowers. And flowers were not easy to cultivate in Nebraska, but Mama specialized in dahlias and cosmos and larkspur.
Can I ask you a question, just briefly, to get back to the Chautauquas? What sort of things would William Jennings Bryan and McAdoo talk about?
Well, they were always political. And, of course, William Jennings Bryan was the Democratic nominee for president, I think, for about 8 times. Mm-hmm. So that covered a long span of years. Mm-hmm. And he was known all over the world for his Cross of Gold speech that he made at the Democratic Convention. And I think he delivered it again and again. He was the old, old type orator. Mm-hmm. And years later, I met Gladys Rudd, who was his granddaughter. Mm-hmm. And she was Glad Rudd Brown, it was her name, was his granddaughter. And she was married to a professor at Cal State. And she got such a kick out of all the things I told her about William Jennings Bryan, although I think she was quite perturbed about his part in the Stokes trial, where he defended the monkey suit.
Yeah.
and he defended the college. No, he was against the college teacher.
Right.
Clarence Darrow from Chicago, mm-hmm. who defended him, and he lost that case. Of course, that was relived, too. Mm-hmm. He was a great biblical personality, but oh my, such a personality. I'll never forget him. I sat on his lap.
You sat on his lap? That's great. How old were you at the time?
Well, I wasn't quite a teenager, I don't think. It mm-hmm. was just, but he came every summer, because he was, that's what he, and his brother was, after that, governor of Nebraska,
mm-hmm.
Another Bryan, his brother. But I don't think, I think William Jennings Bryan was from Missouri. I don't believe he was a Nebraska product.
But you mentioned me, I think, in another conversation that you enjoyed the speakers.
Oh, I loved them. And all my friends would stay in the afternoon, but they'd never go back at night to hear the speakers. They thought I was sort of nuts.
Listen to the speakers.
To be interested in all these speeches. Yeah. But they always drew huge crowds, mm-hmm. but kids weren't especially interested in them, but I always was. I just always
loved
them.
Did you keep up on the kinds of you're saying that they were political speeches. Did you keep up with the political things that they were talking about, or did you just like to watch?
But I thought I think probably it was just the personality that I was mm-hmm. into. But I thought I knew.
Did you read like the local papers?
Oh, sure. Oh, yes. And we took the Omaha Bee every day from Omaha, as well mm-hmm. as the North Platte paper and the Denver Post. So we always had a lot of newspapers in the home.
Yeah.
And that was, of course, long before the days of radio. We always talked about affairs at the table, dinner table.
You talked about what was going on.
What was going on in the world. And, of course, there was poet every day who was that great? That wasn't James Whitcomb Riley, but Edgar Guest. Had a poem every day in the Omaha World Herald, and my mother was, she was a great poetess, and she always read that. Every day, the Edgar Guest poem.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's one of our American, I guess he isn't a great poet, but oh, did he produce poetry?
It was prolific anyway.
Then my mother really was a great poet, and she was always able to create one for any occasion and was often asked by the North Platte paper to write for special occasion. And she was an early advocate of women's voting, and I remember how happy she was when Wyoming first allowed the women to vote. Then one experience I remember during my childhood, we had a governor of Nebraska from North Platte by the name of Keith Neville, who was a big property owner and considered the richest man in town. And I was so proud he was a Democrat, and he was a very good friend of our next door neighbor, Mr. Elder. And it was his custom, Mr. Neville's custom, to call Mr. Elder by phone every night at a certain time to ask about problems. Mr. Elder was a bonded abstractor, and I think he handled some of his business interests. We kids could listen to the conversation when the governor called if we would sit quietly on the floor and not say one word. I thought it was a great privilege that I was getting in on state secrets, although I didn't understand a thing except that he and Mr. Elder had some heated arguments. Then I got to thinking about why a Democratic governor would call a Republican and ask for advice. I watched the papers when Governor Neville would be in town, and I went up to see him in his office and asked him why he had to ask a Republican all the time for advice. He said he couldn't remember doing such a thing, and asked me how I knew. I told him I lived next to Mr. Elder, and I listened when he called him every night. He said, "Next time I need advice, I will ask Mr. Elder to ask you, and then I will know that I'm getting the best Democratic advice possible." And you know, from then on, the kids were never allowed in the room when the governor called.
So you're working for the party then, too, huh?
Then on another occasion, Dot Elder and I were arguing about whose father was the greatest. She said her father was because he was president of the Board of Education and was an abstractor and had an office downtown. All I could think of was that my father was a railroad engineer, and there were lots of them in North Platte. Then I thought of the fact that my father voted for Woodrow Wilson and hers didn't, and that made my father greater than hers. She couldn't believe it, but after she learned it was true, she admitted mine was the greatest. Then in high school, I took lessons in piano and elocution lessons extra from the nuns. At one time, I won an elocution contest with students from each high school in the county participating. It was a dramatic reading, Zenobia, the Captive Queen. I won, but I think it was because Mr. Elder, as Board of Education president, was one of the judges. When I was very small, I participated in a very historic event, the last land drawing in the state of Nebraska. All those who filed for free land in western Nebraska were in North Platte, and the contest had national publicity. The town was jammed with people, and I was selected to draw some of the winning numbers for the free land, and I got my picture in the Omaha paper, and I don't know where else.
So that was a lot of big, you were for a big crowd then?
That was a huge affair. That was the last of the free land drawing in all of Nebraska. And of course, that was how nearly all the West was settled, was the homestead and free. But I think in the free land drawing, they didn't have to do all the things that they did in the homestead to develop it. But I think they had to do some of it. Then when I was 14, my mother and I took a trip to California to see my sister. And we visited the Croston Ostrich Farm, all the missions, Catalina, the Nazimova home, then went to San Francisco, Portland, Seattle, Vancouver, Victoria, Glacier National Park, and visited relatives in Great Falls, Montana. Then while there, I met another president, Woodrow Wilson, who was speaking on behalf of the League of Nations. I insisted on going, but the theater was full and we couldn't get in. The grown-ups went home, but my cousin and I waited at the side entrance of the theater for the president to come out. We were ordered to scram by two Secret Service men, so we went across the street. A huge black car was at the curb of the back door seat, and the back door seat was unlocked, so we climbed in to wait. Finally, the crowd came out of the theater and came to this car. The two men opened the door and found us in the back seat. He was very agitating, stating he had told those girls to scram. Mrs. Wilson, the second one, broke off a rose from her huge bouquet she was carrying and gave it to me. I told her I just wanted to see the president. He smiled, and then we were pushed out of the way, and they were gone. I still have the rose in the family Bible. The president didn't have very good protection. That was really terrible when you come to think of it, wasn't it? Anybody could have been in that back seat. To have his big car sitting there without a soul, without it even locked.
I was wondering, when that thing happened, was that just sort of a natural thing for you to think about? Or, I mean, like when you saw that car
Well, we were standing, and it was a little nippy, and I didn't see any sense why we shouldn't get in it and wait.
You're pretty determined to see him.
I had to see him. Then years later, during high school, when President Harding died on the West Coast, his funeral cortege passed through North Platte. Only a 10-minute stop was supposed to be allowed for oiling, and no one was allowed on the train, except the Masons had arranged for the Queen of Job's daughter to enter the train and place a wreath on the president's casket. When the train pulled in, a huge crowd was at the station. The Masons with the wreath, but the Queen of Job's daughters hadn't arrived. As it was getting later, they asked me if I would take it in, as permission had been granted for just one girl. So I placed a wreath on President Harding's casket only because I was there.
I imagine, too. And you're also Job's daughters, I believe, excludes.
Yeah,
Catholic girls,
I was a member of Job's daughters. But I was there because I thought that was a historic occasion for the funeral train passing through North Platte. So we had a lot of, you see it being in the center of the country and the railroad there, we had a lot of famous people come through on that railroad. Then my brother Cyril had graduated from Lincoln, and it seemed natural for me to go there. I attended 1 year, living at a private home where my brother stayed. I wanted to major in English, but I had no idea what I wanted to do. I loved it, but Mama wasn't too thrilled about paying for my room and board. She had attended a Charities and Correction Conference as the appointee of President Taft in Lincoln some years before, and she had some ideas that all public universities and sororities were dens of iniquity. Then, during my first summer vacation, my sister Ethel rented a room to two former teachers who were selling Chautauqua desks in North Platte. They were very nice and seemed to make lots of money. It was a folding desk and drawing board chart combination, and they persuaded my mother to let me go with them to Western Nebraska towns, and I went first to Sydney. The desk cost $12.50, $15, and $17.50, and the commission was $4, $5, and $6 on a sale. Now, I made pretty good, averaging $20 a day, and that was very good money for those times. We spent a month in Cheyenne. It was during frontier days, and I think every child in town between the ages of 4 and 10 had a chance to buy a Chautauqua desk. We went to Rollins, where the state pen was, and Laramie, where a teacher's college was. Rock Springs and Hanna were coal mining towns. I had so many interesting experiences. I haven't even thought of them until I began thinking of this.
Just a minute, we'll turn the tape over and talk about some of this one, okay?